Okay, today we begin. We begin today Sefer Micha. A new Sefer. Sefer Micha. Appears on page 448. Okay, it's a long Sefer. It's 7 Perakim, I believe. It's a long Sefer. It's not so simple. Okay, let's jump right away into it. All the Hakdamas, we'll do the Hakdamas when we finish the Sefer. We'll save the introduction for the end.
Not the forward and the afterward. We'll do the introduction when we finish.
Okay, Rabbi Yehudah. Dvar Hashem Ashahoya El Micha Ha Moirashti. The words of Hashem that were to the Micha from Moirashti. Who's Moirashti? He was the Reish Sharaf. Moirashti is a place called Moirash. Right away, look in the Mitzutas David. It was the name of a place. We'll see all the whole Min Moresha. Okay, it sounds like Reisha, right? The Mem is part of the Shoresh. Okay, the Mem is part of. I'm going to turn this off. It's not really working. All right, so it's the name of a place called A place called Moresha. Moresha is the name of a place. Now that right away is very critical to understand the Sefer. And there's something very unique about Micha that I'm not so sure is true regarding other Sefarim and Nevi'im. And that is generally the Nevi'im would give over prophecy to the people of their own country, of their own territory. So a Navi who, let's talk about extremes. Then we'll go into more pinpointed examples. Yirmiyah spoke to who? The people in Yerushalayim. Because Yirmiyah was a resident, he was a citizen of Yerushalayim. Yechezkel spoke to the people of Bavel, because he lived in Bavel. Okay, Yechezkel went into the Goyle with the Choresh v'Hamasker, with Yechoniah 11 years before the Churban Bais. So Yechezkel was speaking pretty much to the people who lived in Bavel. Yirmiyah, who was a resident of Yerushalayim, was speaking to the people of Yerushalayim. When we deal with other prophets, Yeshaya was living in Yerushalayim. So who was he speaking to? He was speaking to the people of Yerushalayim. We go back to some of the other prophets. Okay, talk about Yonah. Yonah went with the people into Nineveh. He spoke to the people of Nineveh. Go back to go back to Ovadia. Ovadia spoke to Edom. Okay, he really spoke. Amos was a member of the Aseres Hashvatim, so he spoke to them. Micha is different. Micha is a citizen of the Malchus of Yehuda, Yerushalayim, yet his primary focus, well, I shouldn't say primary, but a significant chunk of his prophecy is not to his own people. It's to the people, the Malchus of Yisrael. So he's preaching, he's located in one territory, and his primary concern is to give over prophecy, not primary, but a very significant chunk of his prophecy is to people that's not his people. It's like you're a rabbi in one shul, you're a rabbi here in this shul, and you're giving a drasha telling people what to do who live in California. What do you know from the people who live in California? You don't know their, you have no relationship to them. You're reading the news something, so you're reading the news some reports about the issues that are taking place in different community. Mind your own business. Right? The rabbis in Lakewood are not preaching what we should do here in Flatbush, and the rabbis in Flatbush are not preaching what they should do in Lakewood. Mind your own business. Then you're in the wrong shul. Mind your own business. The role of a rabbi is to deal with the people in his community and to get them, set them straight. It's not his role to go and tell people in Lakewood what to do. And the people...
How do you transmit the message?
What?
How do you transmit the message? I mean, he's here, he's
Wi-Fi. How do you transmit? Good question. It's a good question. I guess they send messengers. People were there. There were buses, whatever. There was some. Obviously, there was travels. People they tried to use Eretz Yisrael as one. It was one country. People traveled different parts of Eretz Yisrael, and they would relay the message. So this is something which is very interesting. Over here, we learn in the very beginning of it that Dvash Machaya Shahaya El Micha HaMoirashti. Micha is the resident of Moirash. Moirash is a city in Yehuda. And to whom is he giving prophecy to? We're going to go see in a few moments. He's giving prophecy to the Malchus, both to the Malchus of Yisrael, who is the other, who is the competition. We know the Klal Yisrael, the Malchus, was divided between the Malchus of Yehuda Binyamin, and Yisrael, the other 10 Shvatim, the Aseres HaShvatim, and he's going to be giving a double prav. So let's again listen to Mitzudos. Let's see the whole pasuk one more time. Dvar Hashem HaShohayel Micha HaMoirashti. Micha, who lived in the city of Moirash, which was in the Malchus of Yehuda, somewhere near Yerushalayim, Bimei in the days of Yosam, Ochoz, Yechizkiah, Malchei Yehuda. We're going to see the chart in a moment. During these three kings, he spoke during these three kings. Asher Chaza. Oh, sorry? I'm in the Pasuk Aleph. Page 448. I'm reading the Pasuk itself. It's okay. You're right. It's my mistake. I'm sorry. I'm reading the Pasuk. I'm going back to the Pasuk. Bimei Yosam, Ochoz, Yechizkiah, Malchei Yehuda. Asher Chaza, what was his vision? Al Shomroin Virushalayim. So first it says that his prophecy was directed to the capital of the Malchus of Yisrael. Shomroin. Shomron was their capital. And also regarding Averois and issues that were taking place in Yerushalayim. Now, to appreciate, let's read the Mitzvot first. Al Shomroin, Pasuk Aleph. We did the Mitzudo Siyon that told us HaMoirashti min Moresha, v'hi me'orei Yehuda. So he was a resident in the Malchus of Yehuda, but his prophecy was directed Mitzudos David on page 449. Al Shomroin, v'im kol ze lo zochar litlois hanavua limei Malchei Yisrael. Nevertheless, he did not. Litlois Hanavuli Malchei Yisrael Kidersh Amar Behoisheva Omois. He did not. I'm not sure what he means by the word litlois. Let's just see further. Lefisha Hoya Me Eretz Yehuda Volo Nibe Be Aretzois Malchei Yisrael. Right. So what's with litlois? How do you translate that? It means to hang, but that's not what it means over here. What?
To connect,
okay, but... Oh, I'm sorry, now I understand, I'm sorry. We do not, there's something mysterious here. Why don't we mention the parallel kings? That's the end, Why don't we mention here the names of the kings of the Malchus of Yisrael at this time? Why are we only mentioning the name of the kings of Yehuda when Amos and Yoel, when they gave over prophecy, they mentioned, the Pasuk begins by telling us that their era of prophecy took place during the specific kings that lived in their lifetime. Here, there is no mention of the kings that lived in Yisrael during the lifetime of Micha, even though we do mention the kings that lived of Yehuda that lived. So what's the answer? Why are we leaving them out? So the Mitzudas David comes to answer, because he didn't live there. He did not relate to them. They were not his rabbis. They were not his kings. He did not relate to them. So even though the prophecy that he's about to give over does very much relate to them, but we're not giving them honorable mention because he's not a resident of that country, of that part of the country. What?
Or even dishonorable
mention. That's what it is. We do not go and connect the prophecy to the kings of Yisrael. Kederech shama b'hoshel v'omois. By Hoshel and Omois, it does mention the kings of Yisrael. Lefi l'vzeu l'fi shahoya me'eretz Yehuda. Because he was a resident of Moresha. Kederech Yehuda v'lo niba b'aretzos malcha Yisrael. He did not prophesy in the land physically. He did not go to these countries. Kederech shenibu hoshel v'omois. Now, let's right away. No, they were kings. Let's go look. Okay, let's go take a look at the chart. We have a few charts to look at. We turn back to page 915. My favorite chart is on 915. There are more charts, but let's just do one at a time. We see right away Micha. It's important to know Micha relative to the other Trey Asar. Over here, unfortunately, on this chart, I don't know why they didn't want to go give us the other prophets. They didn't put that on this chart. That's one thing I'm upset about on this chart, even though I'm in love, madly in love with this art scroll. But this, they did leave out on this chart, it's Trey Asar after all, right? So they only put on the left, on page 19, in the green, the Trey Asar. It wouldn't have been so bad if they would have put Yeshaya, Yirmiah, Yechezkel, and the other prophets of Sefer, of Nevi'im, only a few more. They could have fit them in, maybe in the next edition. But they have over here the green. And on the green we see relative. It's always getting good. It's very, very important to get a sense relative. When did they live? Micha was the last of four prophets. The last of four major, I mean, and there are more obviously, but of the Tekufa, of the Golos of the Aseres HaShvatim. We cannot begin to appreciate this black dotted line. Okay, the first black dotted line from the top, which is about halfway down the page. That black dotted line is so critical, it is so consequential to the history of the Jewish people, that black dotted line, the galus of the Aseres HaShvatim. When that black dotted line came, the world came to an end. Came maybe even to a greater degree than the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Okay, because the Churban Beis HaMikdash was just a relocation. The Yehuda and Binyamin, they lost the Beis HaMikdash. They were exiled to Bavel. They were relocated. Klal Yisrael still remain. Nothing really changed. They're in Bavel. Malchus of there's Yehuda, Binyamin. They retained the Yichus of the kings. Zerubbabel was a Meyuchus. 70 years later, they came back. Okay, there was a lot of problems. Intermarriage. They forgot the language. V'chulu, v'chulu. But really, what really happened during those 70 years? It was a relocation of the Malchus of Yehuda to Bavel. Here, on this dotted line, it was the end. It was the end of the Aseres HaShvatim. It was the end of a Malchus. Now, the Malchus started out of rebellion. Rechavam split from, Yeravam ben Nevat split from Rechavam. Shlomo Melech's son, there was a major split, but as you see over here on this page 915, the split of Rechavim and Yeravam, the split between these two, the Malchus divided, but the Malchus of Yehuda, you see, goes all the way down the page, all the way down to Tzidkiyahu, and was once again rebuilt. But the Malchus of Yisrael came to an end. And therefore, all of the prophets leading up to that event desperately tried to prevent this from happening. And to a certain degree, they failed. Because they disappeared. The Aseres HaShvatim, as far as we know, more or less, are gone. Okay, I know you'll tell me, all the Mamari Chazal, they're coming back, this and that, that the Yirmiyah brought them back, v'chulu, v'chulu, okay. But more or less, the reality is, they're gone. And these prophets were all attempting very much that this should not happen. So it ends a tekufa. The prophets that don't pass that black line, that dotted line, are really from a different league, a different category. Yoel, Nachum, Chavakuk, Tzefanya, Zechariah, Chagi Malachi are a new generation. Okay, they're from a new generation. Their role was no longer the Aseres HaShvatim. Their role was preserving Klal Yisrael, the Malchus of Yehuda. And they succeeded. Think about it. Even though they may have failed in that, there was a Churbeis HaMikdash, but we're still here to talk about it. Okay, there was a relocation of the Malchus of Yehuda, so the prophets, Yoel, Nachum, Chavakuk, Zephaniah, Zechariah, Chagi, Malachi, we can call them a success. The parents are very proud of them. Okay, and if you want to go add, you want to add Yirmiyah to the mix, and Yecheskel, they were also part of that group, Yirmiyah and Yecheskel. Above the black line, above the dotted line, you have to add Yeshaya. And who else? Am I missing a Michal? Am I missing who else? Is Yeshaya? Anyone else? I think just Yeshaya, right? Just Yeshaya. And these other prophets? I think anyone else? What? Besides Yeshaya, belongs above that line. Above that line over there. I think you got them all right. The main prophets that we have a sefer named after. I think it's just Yeshaya. Okay, so Yeshaya is above the black, the dotted black line, the broken black line. Those prophets were focusing very much on saving the Aseres HaShvat. I know we read into their words, Yubashiach, we read into their words, you know, things about them, other things, but they were living in a time when they were dealing very much with the Aseres HaShvatim, hoping they would not come to an end, which unfortunately they did. Now, if we look at this list of people, who really is the last one of this time period? Micha. Even though on this chart it shows that Hoshea lived longer. Oh, does it? I can't even see so well. Okay, same thing, okay? Same. But Hoshea started earlier. And because he started earlier, he was considered, Micha was a newcomer, was a youngster, so he was considered more last of this era. So it's a very important point that Micha was the last prophet of this era that was trying to hold back the tide, trying to save the Aseres HaShvatim from being lost. Just like we talk about Malachi, we give him so much attention because Malachi was the last prophet. Okay, when prophecy came to an end, this is a very big deal. The last prophet. We give a lot of attention to Micha because he is the last prophet of this era. And that's very, we're going to see some of the Mepharshim and discuss that in much more detail. Now, if you just turn to another chart, there's another very important chart. So you go to, you turn to, there's one more chart that's worthy to look at, and that is page 912. On 912, he shows us here, it's a very interesting chart, because we leave out people. There was something called the Messiah. We all know, we all use that word many times, you know, we abuse that word. There's the Messiah, which means our legacy, but it's the word really is much richer than any possible translation can provide. The Masara means the Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe. Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe. Moshe had in his possession, had in his possession, the perush of Torah Shebichsav. It's Torah Shebichsav, and Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah Shebalpeh. Moshe was in charge. He was the guardian of the authenticity of Torah Shebaal Peh. Just like you have a Sefer Torah, right? We have the Sefer Torah Shebaal Peh. A person wants to write a Sefer Torah, and you have a question. Let's say you're learning from the Torah, and there's a possible error in the Sefer Torah. So what do? You take out the Chumash, and you look in the Chumash. Who says the Chumash, the printed Chumash, is better than the Sefer Torah? Right? You're learning in shul, and the Baal Kriya makes a mistake. And you tell him you made a mistake. And he says back to you, no, I didn't. In the Sefer Torah, this is what it says. Who says they're making a mistake? So he says, but no, in the Chumash, it says the word, there's a different word. Who is right, who is wrong? The son who wrote the Sefer Torah must have written it from a source. Well, you have to have something which we value to be the authority. And being that the printed chumashim we have today, I mean, basically they've been tested. They've been tested. So we assume that the chumash is better, so to speak, than the Sefer Torah, because everyone has the same chumash. And where did the chumash come from? The chumash came from, obviously, they took it from another chumash, and from another chumash. The chulu. You have to establish an authority. So in the Heichel, in the Beis Hamikdash, there was a Sefer Torah that was on the Aron HaKodesh. That Sefer Torah was the final authority regarding the text of the Sefer Torah. Likewise, when it comes to Torah Sheh Baal Peh, someone gets up and gives a shiur, and he says a chiddush. Who says that your chiddush is correct? Who is the authority? Moshe Rabbeinu is the authority. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one that has received the entire Torah. Anyone that says a Mishnah, anyone that says any interpretation of the Torah Sheh Bechsav, and it sounds fishy, and we're not sure if what we're saying is correct, he will be tested by Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the final authority. To whom was that given over after Moshe died? Yehoshua. And from Yeshua went over here, he shows you here, very, very, very fascinating. Yeshua gave it over to the Zikanim. Who are the Zikanim? Well, on this chart on page 912, the Zikanim is Eli HaKoyen. Okay, to the Zikanim. Uzikanim Leneviim. Who are the Neviim? It wasn't given over to a group. It was always one Navi who was in charge. He was the senior Navi. And this chart is an amazing, amazing chart because it shows you here from the Rambam. It's the Hakdamah to the Rambam. Hakdamah to the Rambam and Mishnah Torah. He goes through the entire Mesorah. He goes through every single name, every generation, and he tells us who was the boss. And it's interesting, there were people that lived, very great people that lived during this generation, but they were left out. They were very, very great, but guess what? They're not part of the Mesorah. They are not part of the chain of people that was given the authority to be in charge. Like, look who's missing over here. Yecheskel is missing. Okay, Yecheskel is one example. There are many people that are missing over here. But look over here, during the time of Yirmiyah ben Chilkiah, there was another very, very great prophet, Yecheskel. Okay, we learn Yecheskel here. Where is Yecheskel? He wasn't part of the Mesorah? No, he wasn't. Just because he was a Navi doesn't mean he was given the role of being part of this transmission to the later generations. Okay, so this is all, it's very, very relevant. So you have Yeshua, and a part of this Mesorah is Eli HaKoyen, Shmuel, David, Achia HaShiloini, Elio, Elisha, Yehoyada HaKoyen, Zechariah ben Yehoyada, he was murdered, Tishbav, it's all about the Yehoyada, Zechariah, Hoshea ben Be'eri, Hoshea Omois, Yeshaya, and now comes Micha. Micha is part of the Messiah, which puts him in a different league. Okay, he's not just another, he represents, he is the one of the guardian of the authenticity of Torah Sheh Baal Peh. It's a very critical thing to appreciate. The garden of the authenticity. This concept of Baal Peh. What? Exactly. Yonah's not here. Yonah was not part of the Mesorah. Excellent. Now this thing you should know is very, very relevant in Halacha L'maisa. What do I mean by that? When it comes now to Ezra ben Seraya Veis Dinoi, okay, so Ezra was, then it goes down to the, after Ezra goes down to the Anshei Knesses HaGedayla, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Malachi was the last Navi who was the guardian of the Messiah. What happened after him? Who was the guardian? It went to Shimon HaTzad. Now that the chart stops here because the chart over here is only for the Nevi'im. But the Rambam continues the chart. And it went to what?
But these last Nevi'im overlap. They're part of...
Right now, when it says they overlap...
They're a
team? No, it's
from,
not...
From Nevi'im to Chachamim.
Right, but when we have the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, it wasn't... there was always, it appears to be, one person that was Yoishev Roish. It wasn't just a group. Now, I know the Zugais, I once we son spoke about this, that the Messer was given to a body of people. Correct. But within the body, it wasn't one person. In that body, there was one person who was in charge. There was one person who was the leader of the body. That one person on his own could not do it on his own, could not contain within his head everything, but he was in charge. He was the senior representative, and we give him credit.
I guess so.
He's the glue that kept everything together. Ivadya was the last. Malachi was the last. Now this is very critical. The Rambam continues the Masur to his time. But after the Rambam, there were more. It went, you know, the Barbanel was, well, the Barbanel was, I don't know if he was part of the Masur. I don't think he was part of the Masur. But there are many Rishonim. Now today, there are a lot of manuscripts that either have been discovered or were not available to the masses in the previous generations. A lot of all these, go in these Koivets and Farshim, boys in high school, when they learn Gemara, they learn Bi'iyun, they have these books where they have a collection of many, many Rishonim. Now, it's interesting, years ago, no one ever studied these Rishonim. They were classic Rishonim that were studied, the Rashba, the Ritva, a few things here and there. I don't even remember all the different. And today there's like a whole new world. Today you'll find these new manuscripts. Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he paskin, Rav Moshe Feinstein did not learn these things, even though many of the things that were available, and there were things that indeed were studied by the Bnei Yeshiva. Rav Moshe Feinstein did not study a lot of Rishonim. He studied very select Rishonim. And the reason why is there's limited amount of time a person has to learn, and especially people that were involved in Psak Halacha, Ala Asuke Shmaitza, Aliba de Hilchasa, and a lot of Gedolim only felt it was worthwhile in their limited time they had to study to focus on the Balei HaMesoira. And amongst the Rishonim, talking after the Rambam stopped, after the Rambam died almost 800 years ago, whatever it was, so there was still Rishonim that continued to preserve the Mesoira and are recognized today by us, today, in Tav Shanai and Tess, as part of the Balei Mesoira. And those Rishonim that were the Balei Mesoira are the Ikar. It's very nice to say a chiddush, a beautiful shtickle Torah, and a beautiful insight into the Gemara from a Rishonim that you never heard before. Okay, you're going to find a manuscript that's been lying in the Vatican for who knows how many years, and someone gets a hold of it, and they copy it, and they write everything down, and they produce a critical edition of this Rishonim. It's beautiful, but it's not very relevant for Piske Halacha, La Suke Shmaitza, Liba de Hilchasa, because those Rishonim, as great as they were, and as much Ruach HaKodesh as they were, and as holy as the works are, they're not the guardians, they were not recognized throughout the ages as being the part of the chain, part a link in the chain of preserving the Mesoira. So when you're dealing with Rishonim, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Ran, and the Rosh, and people of that nature, I don't know all the exact details, there are very limited number of Rishonim that are part of the Mesoira. And to appreciate what that means, you don't have to look more than what you have over here, and this from the Rambam. And that is, over here you have a list of people, and this is just a small, very small section of the prophets that we learn about in Enoch, a very small fraction of the prophets. And we know those prophets that we study are extremely holy, and their message is eternal, and that's why we spend so much time learning. But as far as being a member of this exclusive club, who was a guardian of the Mesorah Shetorah Shebal Peh, there are a very limited number of prophets and great people that had that duty, and their prophecy and their teachings take on an entirely different dynamic, entirely different nature that is much, much more intense and much greater than the other Rishonim. And here, when we learn Sefer Micha, we have to appreciate that Micha is counted by the Rambam as one of the members of the Balei Mesorah. We just spent months and months learning Yoina. Yoina's message is eternal, but he's not part of the Mesorah. Okay, he's not the guardian of the Mesorah. Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think the Meiri is part of it. It's a very good example. It's a very, very good example. The Beis HaBechir, the Meiri is delicious. The Meiri from all of the Rishonim is from those whose writings are, it's so well written. It's so easy. A Ritva and a Rashba, you can break your head. Break your head to try to figure out exactly what they mean, the depth of what they're trying to say. The Meiri, it's like you're reading a footnote in an art scroll. It's very right. He's very straightforward. He's a Rishon. Yet, is he from the Balei Mesorah? I don't think so. He's not from the Balei Mesorah. So, when like Rav Moshe Feinstein, will he quote a Meiri? I don't think so. I don't think he ever quotes a Meiri. In Igris Moshe, he only quotes a Meiri. Rav Moshe was a very unique person. He was so brilliant. He paskin straight out of the Gemara. Rav Moshe Feinstein, what he did was not real what he did. He went and he learned the Gemara. And he went to the Rishonim. Imam Shteg the Gemara, and he went to the Rishonim, to all of the Balei Mesorah, basically all the Balei Mesorah, and then he looks at the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, the Shach and the Taz, and he discusses, and he basically says, and he gives a psak for a modern day issue, basically doing the same thing that the Rishonim did, or the early Achronim did. Like going back like 300-400 years, he's going back. And then Rav Moshe, he works. His methodology is just follow the money. Follow the paper trail. You go down the Balei Mesorah. Will Rav Moshe Feinstein bring in a Meiri? Not really. No, I don't think so. What? No, I think by they already had it. There were other Rishonim besides the Meiri. There were many, many other Rishonim. I know Rabbi Schmidman over here around the corner, the Rav over here, Rabbi Schmidman. So when he was a Bacher, he used to go to Rav Moshe very often. He told me he would go to him very, very often to his Shiurim and talk and learning with him, and they would mention to him different Rishonim. And Rav Moshe says, "I'm not familiar with these Rishonim." And he doesn't learn them. He does not, like, he basically told them that he learns very limited number of Rishonim because they're not part of the Balei Mesorah. And Rishonim also, he's given Gilad Shiurim and he talks about different very controversial issues. He's very into Rishonim. And Shiurim, he goes to, everything is out there. He makes copies and he's very, very broad. But yet, when he comes to controversial issues, if the Rishon that he uncovers, which we know to be 100%, I mean, there are people that lived during that time, people question exactly who were they. It's like today, you know, just because today, anyone can publish. It's a joke today. Okay, anyone in front of anyone can take out a computer and go do whatever you want and go publish, desktop publishing, and you can make believe you're the Goel Hadar. So today doesn't really mean anything that you have a sefer. You have to be accepted. Today haskama really stands for quite a bit today. Our reputation as well. Years ago, it was much harder to publish. So not, the average guy is not going to go publish unless he had, you know, he was authentic. But nevertheless, people all the time published. So even during the time of the Rishonim, I've heard this many times. They discover new manuscripts and they publish them. How do, and sometimes we really don't know who this person was. It's very vague. Who was he? We never heard of him before. He's not cited by other Rishonim. Other Rishonim don't ever quote him. And we don't know very much about him. So just because he lived during that time and he's writing Chidushim on the Gemara or on other matters, who says that what he says is authentic? And even if we do know as a fact that this person is a Kodosh, like Yecheskel Hanavi, okay, everything he says we're gonna absorb with the greatest Yiras Haraimimus, but he's still not a member of the Balei Mesira. Right, they wanted to, in fact, ban it. Exactly, he's coming. Dr. Friedman is coming to really expand, to bring out the point. Even Yecheskel himself, they challenged that maybe there's something wrong over here because some of the psukim that he wrote in Yecheskel are kineged what it says in the Torah. And they had to go break their heads. They had to go up to the attic with 300 barrels of oil. I've got the Gemara that tells you all the details of what they did to go and try to decipher the words of Yecheskel, that he should not be banned, that his sefarim should not be put in Geniza. But nevertheless, Yecheskel never made it to the league. Not making it, he wasn't in position. It's a mazel of who's in position to be a member of, to whom it's given over to. Moshe gave over the Mesora to Yehoshua. Yehoshua lezikenim, uzikenim lenevim. The Rambam in the Hakdama to Mishneh Torah takes that Mishnah and breaks it down into little teeny parts and tells you every single member of the chain. And part of the members of the chain is what they present to you here on this chart. And look how many people we leave out. And what's relevant for us in learning Micha is to appreciate that this Sefer is in a different league because we have Micha as part of the Mesora taken right from Yeshaya Hanavi. Now, next, okay, one more point to point out, going back to Micha, it's just worthy to take a look at the kings just to get familiar with the names of the kings that he overlapped with. Micha, he overlapped, we learn over here in the Pasuk, the three kings of Yehuda, page 915, on the chart of 915, Micha lived in the time of Yosam, Ochaz, and Chizkiah. Okay, he lived during the time of these three kings of Yehuda. And he lived in Yehuda, in Moresha, whatever it says there. And the Malchei Yisrael at his time, as you see over here in the chart, where it appears to be Shalom, Menahem, or maybe he was a little earlier. He was earlier maybe, I'm not really even sure. But at least Pekachia, Pekach, and Hoshea, not the Navi, Hoshea was the last king of the Malchei Yisrael. These are at least the three kings that he overlapped. He was a contemporary with these three kings in Yisrael. It doesn't seem he even met them. Maybe he never even saw them, because he didn't live there. And these kings were troubled. These were troubled. Hoshea was already good. Hoshea was a good king. But the other ones were not so simple, and he lived in their lifetime, and he's giving them Musa. He's giving them Musa from afar, which is a Chiddush. Like we said, today, if a rabbi in Lakewood would tell us what to do in Flatbush, we would not like it. We would say, you know, you have your own issues in Lakewood. Okay? You don't have to come and clean up our mess. We have our issues, you have your issues, and let's be friends. Stick to your own. So we wouldn't like it. So who says they liked it? In the Stama, they did not very much appreciate when a Navi in Yehuda is giving Musar to what's going on in Yisrael. Just like they didn't like when Hoshea and Amos, who were living in Yisrael, then they would mind their own business. Okay, they didn't go and give Musar. They didn't give Musar to the people of Yehuda. They mind their own business. They were local. So it's a chiddush, it's a tremendous chiddush for a Navi to overstep his bounds and preach in a domain that's not his. That we have to appreciate that point as well as we go forward. Yeah,
Michal. No, I'm just going to say two things. One is that he also, I don't know when these prophecies were, but if he was around during the time of Ahaz, that was a pretty terrible time.
It was, absolutely.
And when Bate Medrash were locked up and where I assume that prophets were not
popular.
Right.
But at least he was a resident. At least he can speak his own because he lived there. I'm a citizen, just like you.
As far as criticizing outside of your domain, that's a letter to the editor.
Yeah, but they suppress them. Letters to the editor is a very dangerous thing. It's a very dangerous thing, letters to the editor, because I know firsthand is that it's not a free-for-all. They're very selective in which letters they publish. And the letters that they do publish, you all see feedback all the time is, it's not what I wrote. You edited what I wrote. It's not fair. This is the lie. It's not what I wrote. So if you could imagine they're editing, and this goes on everywhere. There's no such thing as freedom of press. It's freedom of press for the one who published the newspaper, but not for the people who wrote letters. So you can imagine, you'll always hear complaints from people who write letters, that's not what I wrote. You just could imagine how many letters they didn't even publish.
How many letters that are
well written, are eloquent, are well written, and present a very different perspective on an issue, and are... Some people spend hours composing these letters to express their opinion and their dissatisfaction with what they see, and you would never know because they never see the light of day. And who makes that decision? The editor-in-chief, because he has customers to satisfy, especially when it's for free. Yeah. Okay, so... We have freedom of press, but it's not really, it's only for the people who are, the freedom
who
is the people
the
who owns the paper. They are.
Right.
But the other people, they don't have a voice. They really don't. And they make their own paper. It's not, you don't have a critical mass to make your own paper. It's amazing. I never appreciated that, how the media really, really controls the world. It's not a joke. It's mamish, not a joke. And that's how I never appreciated why. That is why every political organization has their own news outlet. Okay? It took a long time to sink in that you're a nobody in this world until you have your own newspaper. When you have your own newspaper, then you become a somebody. It's really true. And, you know, the Aguda, their biggest loss, the Aguda is, not that I'm, I agree with the Hashkof, I'm just saying,
but
is the Jewish Observer. The Jewish...
That was an intellectual magazine.
Intellectual? Okay, but one thing it was something which they were able to use very effectively to express their Hashkofa, whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah.
Okay, whether you agree with it or not, and a lot of people got very critical of it, but it's really amazing that they let it go down the drain. To me, it's just shocking, because now they really have nothing. It's just shocking to me, they have no way to communicate with the world. Forget about their people, their constituency, they have no way to communicate. How did they allow the Jewish Observer to fold? Whatever it cost. Find the money. You don't have an Aguda if you don't have a Jewish Observer. They had a reputation. It took them decades to build up a critical, you know, where people will pay attention. You may not agree, but if you want to know where they stand, gone. No, you just read the Michal. National Council of Young Israel. It's smart. They at least they have the national. It's still there. The viewpoint. No. Gone? Oh, I'm behind the times then.
Even when I was there, it disappeared.
They don't have viewpoint anymore? Nothing?
No.
The
Jewish action. Maybe I'm getting confused. Then the Jewish action. It's good. It's really good. It really. It sets. It's not just the articles. It sets a tone. This is us. Whether you like us or not, that's your problem. But it presents who they are. Okay, the Ated. Who's the Ated? I always forget the Ated is I forgot which party is the Ated. The Hamodia is Ger. Okay, Ger. What's the difference between the Hamodia? Why did the Hamodia have to make their own paper? There's the Ated. The Ated says everything you need to know about it says. No, the editorials. It's Ger. They disagree with. With Litvish Olam, and they want to have their own control of the media. So they had to spend an enormous amount of money to make their own paper for no reason whatsoever. You don't see it?
No.
It's very subtle. Because there's nothing going on, that's why. They have nothing to say, that's why. But it's there. They needed to be there so when the day comes and there's an issue that's close to heart, they can say it. Otherwise, you drown it out. It's very sad. I really. It's a
tradition.
That's not really. It's not really a newspaper. That's not. It's not even halacha. No, that's just articles. It's not a news. It's not a take on the news. It's not an interpretation of the news. The Jewish action, even though it's a collection of articles, it still interprets the world in a very.
It's mainly what activities the organization is involved in.
But it's presenting, right? It's presenting the world in a certain light. It's different, and it's amazing because look, why do they go out of business, Jewish Observer? Because Mishpacha magazine put them out of business. Okay, let's be honest here. Okay, Mishpacha magazine, and what is Mishpacha magazine? It's no man's land. It's no man's land. Nishta hi nishta he. What?
It's women's land.
It's true, right? It's true. And Ami is the same thing. Though Ami is a little bit more of a Satmar approach to the world. Really, Ami magazine definitely has it's written by Satmar. It's a Frankfurter, so. But it's also, it's no man's land. It's not representing a moitzat. It's not representing a major, major organization, a major league organization. All right, going back to Micha now, we know he's a member of the Masorah. We know during the kings that he lived in. And now let's just go a little bit more forward with that bit of Hagdama. Okay, let's see over here. Let's turn to the right page. Turning back to Micha. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi, there's only one Rashi, Dvar HaMarashi, Meir Moresha. Okay, why does Rashi need to say that? I don't know. That's what the Mitzudah Sion said. It's from the line of Yehuda. He's a member of the Society of Yehuda. Reisharov. He was the first Reisharov, the Micha, from Moresha. Very good, I like it very much. You're not going to get an argument from me on that. Okay, Reisha, how you know how many Rabbanim were in Reisha? There's a big fat book, Rezhenov. Rezhenov is Polish for Reisha. They put out a memorial book after the war, after the Holocaust. The people, the survivors of Reisha, there were, I think, approximately 500,000 people in the vicinity of Reisha. 500,000 people, and Hitler, Yimach Shmei V'Zichro, Kimat wiped out every single one of them. Okay. What's the word, the famous word? Juden? Juden? Reich. Clean. Clean from Jews.
Cleansed.
Reisha. And it's surrounding the suburbs. 500,000 people gone.
In Poland.
It was the largest in a certain section of Poland. I've got all the details there. But Reisha goes back since the beginning of Poland. Goes back way. They have the entire history of Reisha in this big, thick book. It's online. Whole book is online. and they have all of the Rabbanim that they know ever existed in Raisha. There must be 50 or 50. And they were probably at the same time. No, there were different parts. There was a lot of fighting. There was always a lot of fighting in Raisha. And certainly when the Haskalah came around, it was the hotbed. There was a lot going on. A lot of irreligious Jews, anti-religious Jews, and a lot of Hasidim. And the Hasidim did not at all get along with the Litvisha crowd, not from Lithuania, but the Jews that were the Misnagdim. There was a lot of things going on. There was a lot of Belza. Belza Hasidim lived in Raisha. But there was a lot going on there. Okay, let's go over here to the words of the Radak. The Radak says, "Devar Hashem Shachiel El Micha Mahamirashti B'me Yosam Zanavi Mitzanuhu B'Sefer Yirmiya." Okay, so he makes another appearance. Yirmiya was much later. There's no overlap with the lifetime of. There's no overlap between Micha and Yirmiya. So what's he doing over there? Micha Hamirashti. We find him, he's just mentioned, but he didn't live in the time of Yirmiyah. Why don't we mention them? So Rashi, the Mitzvah Solos, because he did not live there. We don't mention them by name. They were Rishoyim. Well, not necessarily. Hashem wasn't all that bad, but since he did not live there, he was not part of their Malchus, that we do not mention, but he did say Nevuah concerning them. Let's look at the Malbum. The Malbum part, there is no Malbum. There is no Malbum. Now let's look at the Mamori Chazal. These are the very important Mamori Chazal, and this really summarizes what we've learned today. Asher hoya el micha hamirashi harayu oimer v'nastem gei horai. It says that it will melt. V'nastem gei horai ki agia gei horim el otzal. Okay, that's a pasuk in Zechariah. I don't know what it means. I don't know what that pasuk means. Let's leave it for now. Chazon Yeshaya. Now that pasuk was the only one. All he's trying to point out over here for our purposes is Zechariah. There's another prophet called Zechariah. We have not yet learned his words. And then there's Yeshaya ben Amoitz. And then there are the words of Hoshea. Devar Hashem Ashahoya El Hoshea ben Be'eri. That we learned. And then there is Amoitz, we learned. Divrei Amoitz Ashahoya van Noigdim. He lived in a place called Noigdim. We had a discussion. It means he was a shepherd. He was a roya. Noigdim means sheep. Devar, well, it's one interpretation. Devar, then we have Devar Hashem Hayash El Micha, and now we have number 5, Micha HaMoirashti. So we've quoted 4 psukim, but we really just could have said 4 names. There are 5, and here's the 5th pasuk. There are 5 prophets that gave over a message to Klal Yisrael in the same period of time. Among those 5 prophets, who was the last? The last is Micha. Melamed, Shukula, Misnabu, Beperek Echad, all of them gave over a message in the same era. They did not necessarily live in their same time period, but they all were living in an era that was leading up to the Golos of the Aseres Hashvatim. There was a very great threat from Sancheirev, Melech Ashur. Everyone woke up in the morning worried about Ashur, worried about Sancheirev. That was taking place during this era. Perek Echad. Avol Yato Yude Mi Kodam Esmi. Who came first? Kevon Shamar. Since it says by Hoshea, Techilas Diber Hashem by Yisheva. Almost when it says the pasuk Shnasayim Lefnei Harash, it was 2 years before the earthquake. Over Yeshayu Oimer B'Shnas Mois Hamelch Uziyah V'Huchaya B'Yom Harash. So we're coming to relate to an earthquake, and we know the date of the earthquake was during the time of Uziyah. Now we know, and that Micha was in the time of Yosam. That was later. Devar Hashem Ashahoya El Micha Hamirashti Bime Yosam Milamed Shekulon Kodmu Es Micha. Since there are little tidbits of information by all of the other kings. I don't have all the details. Mainly it circles around the earthquake. And the earthquake took place during the time of Uzziah. And Uzziah was before Yoisam, Ochaz, and Yechizkiah. So we're able through that to date to basically figure out that Micha was the last of these prophets. From all the prophets that gave over a message during this time, he is the last. Now, why is that important to us? That's important to us that he has the last word. If we're going, if all of these prophets are going to describe an event that's going to take place during the time of Sancheirif, the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim, and we find a contradiction between their words, then we have to give the final word if there's a contradiction to Micha. Why? Because if all of them are predicting doom and gloom, bad news, well, bad news can change. If a Navi says, what? Exactly. 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 So, exactly. Exactly. So if we find a contradiction between the words of Micha and the prior and the four prior prophets, we have to assume that even the first four were MS, but because Klal Yisrael did teshuva, there was some degree of teshuva, there was a game change. Okay, the plans were changed. The plans, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans of how to proceed in history were changed. Because Micha has the final word. But no one came after Micha. So whatever Micha says has the ultimate, has authority, has much more weight, because there's no one to come along later and to contradict the words of Micha. And don't tell me, oh, but what about the later prophets of Yirmiyah and Yechezkel and Zechariah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi? Those prophets, being that they're later, their focus is not on the Aseres HaShvatim. The primary concern of those prophets is on the Malchei Yehuda, not the Malchei Yisrael. So this is the end of an era. And in this era, if we're going to find contradictions, we have to appreciate that Micha has the final say, the final word regarding these prophets, because he is the last. That is an important point. Okay, that concludes this Maamar Chazal. Okay, and that really pretty much. Now there is one other thing that I saw in the art scroll, in the English art scroll, in the high. You know, there's no Hakdama. I was very disappointed. There's no Hakdama to. They have a Hakdama to most of the Treyasa, but they don't have a Hakdama to Micha. But there, in the first note, it says that Nanda Chazal, that for some reason they didn't mention over here in the art scroll. Very surprised, and that is Devar. It's always important to look at the word that is used to describe the vision, the statement of a prophet. Some prophets, we have the word chazoin. Chazoin Yeshayahu ben Amoitz, Asher Chazah. Okay? Chazoin Oivadia. By Yirmiyah, what does it say by Yirmiyah? I don't remember. Every prophet has a unique word. Divrei Yirmiyah ben Chalkiyo. So there's the word Divrei. Each word has a very unique connotation. And in fact, Chazal rate. There are 10 different expressions that are used, and they're rated, and maybe they are rated, they're not rated, and each one has a different connotation. The Medrash points out that there are only two prophets from all the prophets which share the word, have two words, Devar and the word Chazoin. Okay, there are two prophets. I don't remember even what it says anymore. Forgot. It says the word Devar and the word Chazah. That's a lethal combination. Okay, that puts Micha. I have to go back and review. Blin Eder, I'll go back and review and tell you exactly what it says there in the art scroll. But the combination of Devar and Chazoin is unique. And Moshe Rabbeinu, does it say the word vision chazon by Moshe Rabbeinu? I don't believe so. Okay, Moshe doesn't say the word chazon. Yeshayit says the word chazon. Micha, to a degree, is a combination of Moshe and Yeshayah. And that's very frightening. Because Chazal say, a chozeh, but not a dvar. Not a dvar. Chazal, very often, they put together Yeshaya and Moshe. They say that no one reached the prophecy level of Moshe Rabbeinu b'splak Maria ha-me'ira like Yeshaya. Moshe was able to see things clearly, 20-20. And from all the prophets, no one was able to have a nevuah for clarity. There was always some cloudiness in their prophecy, with the exception of Yeshaya. Yeshaya had a certain clarity. What is very interesting is that Micha is not listed as being equal to Yeshaya. Okay, he doesn't say that anywhere. And doesn't say that Micha is listed as being equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. But we don't understand how prophecy works. There are many different dimensions in prophecy. But to some degree, Micha captures elements of both Yeshaya and Moshe. And if Yeshaya and Moshe are the two greatest prophets, and now we're coming to say that Micha is a connection to those two, you only can begin to imagine the potency and the power of these prophets, of this prophet. And there's something to be said about that. And especially when we gave this Hagdama that Micha is the last of this era, and this era is a very sad, disturbing, critical era in Jewish history, because it's an era where something really came to an end. The Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim is more real than the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Because the Churban Beis HaMikdash is just a relocation of the Jewish people, and we actually came back. So we will rebuild the temple one day. But the Aseres HaShvatim are gone. And this was all warned, and we were prepared for this with these prophets. And he is the last of these prophets, and he's equal to Moshe and Yeshaya. This is something very, very disturbing or very, very powerful about his words. Yeah.
Maybe Dvar means present tense now, while Chazon is the future.
Okay, that's true. There's definitely truth to what you're saying. A vision is the future, and Dvar means now. Okay, in a chanami. You're right, okay, so it's a combination of the present and the future. That is true. Okay, Inachanami. That's very good. All right, so we concluded Pasuk Aleph, and we're from tomorrow, we go on to Pasuk Beis.
We still have time.